2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
Hey, everybody. J.J. Cooper, Matt Eddy, and special guest Mark Topkin here on another Baseball America podcast. We are diving in today on everything Rays, everything with the Rays stadium situation, and kind of what this all means for the Tampa Bay Rays. And, you know, obviously we had the hurricane just come through. The roof of Tropicana Stadium was ripped off, basically, with almost no exception. There's a little sliver of the remaining roof, which means it also opened up an indoor stadium to the outdoors, which is not ideal. And there's no better person for us to kind of get the insights, get the all the aspects that go into this than Tampa Bay Times Rays beat writer Mark Topkin. And when I say Rays beat writer, I mean the person who has been there from the really before the start of the Tampa Bay Devil Rays at the time to now. Mark, thank you for joining us. And most importantly, first off, you know, how is everything going in St. Petersburg for you and all, but just kind of overall, like, is how is the recovery going from a second hurricane in just a, you know, a matter of months?
Yeah, no, I appreciate you guys asking, and thanks for having me on. The recovery effort's been slow, to be honest. I mean, people, I live out on St. Pete Beach, one of the barrier islands, as they're referred to, and, you know, Treasure Island, Madeira Beach, there's kind of a string of them, and the area that was hit the hardest, certainly from both storms, because the one that paralleled the West Coast and this one that came from the West, and there was a lot of debris, and people were just kind of getting the stuff out of their house that was damaged from Hurricane Helene when the warnings came to evacuate because of Hurricane Milton. So there's literally people where there's two piles of their, you know, the stuff they took out and the stuff they didn't get out. And the, you know, government, local government, federal government, everybody that's been here has done a great job. They basically moved the debris piles as much as they could before the second hurricane came, because, you know, literally flying couches and toilets and things like that were already out on the street would add to the damage. So really good job. There was obviously extensive damage. Tropicana Field probably will be the iconic image of this storm. And maybe secondary was an office building in downtown St. Pete that got hit by a giant construction crane that came crashing down, which that office building happened to be the home of the Tampa Bay Times. So kind of both places I work were damaged extensively in this, but my family's safe. My home is safe. Most of my friend circle, most of the Times people got through this pretty well, all things considering. So thank you guys for asking.
So glad to hear that. The morning after the hurricane blows through, it is kind of one of the first images that we all get is, oh, like the Tropicana Field, there's no roof anymore. You know, it was basically a strengthened, you know, but fabric does not do the right word, you know, a Kevlar enforced and all that. But it was basically a roof that was not structural as much as it was tied to the structures and all. It got ripped off, you know, torn away. And Mark, you've done extensive reporting on this. We're going to have the link to your story in the show notes for this as well, but kind of just take us through kind of what that means. And I guess kind of, as you've already laid out, this already seems to mean that they know that they're not going to be there for opening day in 2025. Like that the repairs will not be done by then. But what does this mean? Like, I mean, for the Trop, and what is kind of the unknowns for the Trop as far as getting it back to functioning and, you know, being able to hold games there again at some point in the future?
Yeah. And I'll try not to be too long winded and meander here, but it's really a multi-level question and a multi-level answer. And for some of the people that aren't as familiar with the situation here, and I can tell you based on some of the Twitter comments to my story, a lot of people are not as familiar with the situation here, but the Rays had just completed a process about 10 weeks ago, 11 weeks ago, where everything was signed and sealed to build a new stadium. The groundbreaking for that was scheduled for January. Construction would start shortly thereafter. It's going to be built essentially adjacent to Tropicana Field in one of the parking lots or a couple of the parking lots right there. The plan was for that stadium to be finished right around the end of the 2027 season, assuming it was done on schedule. Then the Trop would be demolished. That would be used initially for parking, and then part of this development that's going to be built around the new stadium. It's essentially, if you're familiar with the Battery in Atlanta, the Ballpark mm-hmm. Village in St. Louis, Texas Live, that type of thing. We're told it's actually would be about 1.5 times the size of the Battery. It's a very impressive development built by the Heinz Corporation, a well-known global developer. So all that was the plan, thus setting the stage for the answer to your question. The Trop is only going to be used for 3 more seasons. It's used for other events besides the Rays, of course, but they're the primary tenant. You know, a lot of the high schools have graduations there, entertainment, WWE was here, things like that. So there's other things that the Trop's going to be used for. Thus, the damage. So they have to decide, can it be fixed? How long would it take to fix it? And then is it worth, in quotes, fixing? If it takes a year to fix it, then you're only going to have 2 more seasons to play. But then you also have to know, and I don't think any of these questions have been answered yet, given all the other damage in throughout the city of St. Petersburg, throughout Pinellas County, is there going to be any conversation about delaying the start of the new stadium, or even logistically from construction supplies and from site preparation, things like that? So you think the Trop only has 3 more years, and then you could argue it's not worth fixing in that scenario, but you also have to know, will the new stadium be built and be built on time, that you only need it for 3 years? Now, if you can get past that level of questions, next is, how can the Trop be fixed? The most obvious, I think, suggestion people have made, and I had this question too, so I'm not admonishing the question, but can't you just take the roof off and play in an open air stadium? Not ideal in Florida, but it can be done. The Marlins did it for a number of years. All the minor league teams here do it. You can't do that. The Trop was built as a enclosed multi-purpose facility with no drainage system at all. There's a concrete slab under that playing field, a very thick concrete slab. It's filled with electric wiring. That's how, if you have a trade show, you can plug in your booth to sell Baseball America subscriptions, right? You need something for that flashing sign. Mm-hmm. So that's why you can't just say, rip off the roof and play it. I don't know enough about engineering. I've been told this is not true. I mean, is it cheaper to put in a drainage system and rip up the floor than it would be to build a new roof? I don't know the answer to that either. But it's also, the lighting isn't built for outdoor play. The walls probably are not safe. If they're, you know, there's those cables that support the roof are tied to the sides of the building. So there's
their structure.
Construction, right. So there's a lot of things that would have to be addressed. But the answers to your questions are, they have to know, how can it be fixed? How long would it take to fix it? How much would it cost to fix it? And is that worth doing? Versus the costs of being displaced for 3 seasons or possibly more, with the specter of what's going to happen to the new stadium's time schedule, time frame, kind of driving all that as well.
You hit on a big point there, which is the Rays have been trying to get a stadium, a plan, a long-term plan put together for a large portion of your time, you know, covering the Rays, I would say at this point. There was the floated of, well, we're going to be two cities where we'll be half the time here. We'll be like snowbirds, you know, a lot of people who live in the area, where we'll move to Montreal for part of the year and then we'll move back and all that. And obviously the PA was not ever a big fan of the 2-location team and all that. But here we are. So the Rays have now kind of got a long-term plan, which is great for the Rays. But it does add a complicating factor here in many ways, as you just laid out, because Tropicana Field now has an expiration date. But to kind of take it from that further step, assuming that, let's say that, you know, again, we don't know if it could be repaired for June of 25, for, you know, 26. We don't know that yet. But what we do know is it fair to say, Mark, that there is no... Now, at this point, when you talk about where are they going to play for the start of 25, or we don't know if it's going to be 25, 26, 27, the Rays challenge now is what of the bad options is the best bad option? Is that a fair way to put it?
Yeah, and certainly maybe bad or at least less than suboptimal. Andrew Friedman taught me that word when he came here way back at the start of this Duesternberg regime, suboptimal, but I'll borrow that from Andrew. And yeah, none of these solutions, and we could literally talk for a couple hours about all these solutions, one of which is obviously near your guys' home in North Carolina. And I think every single one we could make a case for and make a case against. And fairly done. So there are no ideal solutions. But I would also frame it to you guys, going back to what I said earlier, and put this in your own. If you're looking, you get a new job and you're looking for an apartment, are you looking, thinking you're going to stay there for a couple months? Or are you looking, thinking you're going to stay there for 3 years? That would affect the apartment you rent or the house you buy, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm sure the last thing they want to do is move several times, depending on what move means. But you've got a lot of, obviously, playing staff, coaching staff, training staff. You know, you don't have to bring everybody, and you probably don't need a lot of the business side to come. But, you know, the front office people are going to want to be there. If you're playing 90 miles away and at Disney or Port Charlotte, a lot of people can go back and forth. If you're playing in Miami or you're playing in Durham or you're playing in Charlotte or Raleigh, or I've had people suggest Buffalo, Oakland. I mean, I think they're going to stay on the East Coast. We did look up, and I saw you guys picked up on this too, but the largest baseball stadium in the country without a major tenant is the beautiful Charles Schwab Field in Omaha, Nebraska. That's sitting there. I mean, there's different scenarios we could all make, but I think part of their question is they have to know how long they need to get this place for. But someone else told me, when do they need to know where they're opening the 25 season? And their answer was yesterday. I mean, they have so many things they've got to sort out, and not knowing if it's a short or long-term solution.
That's step one, right? Like, if they know that they're going to be back in the trop by June of 25, then these are become, then if it's like you've got to be the traveling roadshow to Port Charlotte, you know, which is the Rays spring training facility, or one of the other spring training facilities within the St. Pete, Tampa market, become like a very viable option, because you're essentially you're staying in a hotel. You know, to use your analogy, right? Like, okay, I'm here for 2 months and then we're going to move in back into our house. There's renovations being done. We just have to find somewhere to hang out. 3 years, you know, that's a much different story, I would imagine. And to go on what you just asked, I know that a lot of people, like, you know, we got the same comments on social media. Oh, they should go to Oakland. And knowing now that the Rays are long-term fixtures in the Tampa St. Pete area, that makes no sense to me from that standpoint. Like, you just hit on it, but logistically, your fan base having to stay up to watch games on the West Coast makes no sense, does it?
No, and I would think, you know, ideally Eastern time zone, maybe Central time zone can work, but yeah, you're coming back here, right? So you, even if it's 3 years, which would certainly be the worst case scenario, that you have to play somewhere else, but this is still, you know, their home. This is still where they're going to be, you know, in theory, for the next 30, or I think there's a 30-year lease and a 20-year option on the new stadium for them. So as long as any of us are going to be alive, they're going to be back here and playing here. So, right, to go establish a foothold somewhere far away and changing time zones. And look, I would never, ever try to get inside the head of MLB and Rob Manfred, but they have endorsed, whether you like the idea or not, Oakland's plan to leave, the A's plan to leave Oakland. I don't think they're going to want to put another team there right now. And the political aspect of that doesn't seem like a logical move either. So I don't think Oakland, Portland, any of the West lost, beat the A's to Vegas. I've had people suggest that. I mean, all these different scenarios that involve out West, I don't think are worth of much conversation, but I think there's almost like the group of Tampa Bay area stadiums, the spring training stadiums, whether it be the Yankees, the Phillies, the Blue Jays, the Pirates. I mean, any of those that are these, you know, very nice facilities, they would all require some form of upgrade, whether they need the data gathering technology enhanced replay, the locker room facilities, the weight room. There's going to be some things that, you know, some of these teams have at two facilities. That's all going to have to be at the stadium site if it's a long-term thing. But that's the one group. Then you kind of have Port Charlotte, which the Rays certainly have access to as their facility, but it's going to be the least convenient. There's no airport within an hour. There's one hotel that would be suitable probably for any team within about a 45-minute drive. So a lot of logistical issues there. Disney, easiest solution, but Disney, you know, that's kind of a busy place. They have a few other people that come through there on an annual basis, and haven't had a chance to find out like how booked they are. The Rays did get through a couple weeks of spring training there, and then we could work our way up, you know, out of the state of Florida. Some of the, you know, as we talked about, Raleigh is obviously very hot for an expansion team. I've already seen an article with some of their politicians quoted as saying they would welcome the Rays. The Durham ballpark would obviously be a great fit, smaller size, but things can be adjusted. And then, you know, Charlotte wants the team. Nashville wants the team. You know, I think we could come up with some other places. Montreal, I guess I had threw that out there, and I've since been told that's under a pretty major construction project of replacing, ironically, their roof there at Olympic Stadium. Don't know if that could be halted, you know, to allow a team to play there. So still a lot of things, but a number of choices, and I think it's almost in a little bit of buckets. The spring training stadiums locally, the 90 miles away, sharing with the Marlins. We didn't mention that one is another possibility. There'd be no weather issues there. Any of the outdoor stadiums in Florida, you're going to have a lot of rainout issues. And even if not rainout issues, going back to those early Marlins days, they said it wasn't the actual games that got postponed. It was the amount of days they lost BP. They lost pitchers throwing their bullpens. They lost infield work. All of that affects fans, obviously, making decisions whether to come to a game or not, if they think they're going to get poured on. So there's so many levels to these decisions to be made. But I think at some point relatively soon they'll start winnowing this into at least buckets of what scenarios work, and then the timeline factor we talked about.
I do want to hit on the Port Charlotte thing for a minute, because again, I know a little bit about it because of going down there for spring training, having a grandmother who lived in St. Petersburg before she passed. But being a native down there, being someone who understands the area, I think someone may hear it, like listening to this may say, oh, it's, you know, it's 45, you know, 60 minutes away south of the Tampa St. Pete area, no big deal. But if you're down there, like, that's the Skyway Bridge. It feels like that's in a different, that's not part of that market. Is that a fair way to put it?
Oh, no, it's definitely fair. I mean, when you stay down there for spring training, you get the Fort Myers television stations. I mean, they're, you know, it's really more of kind of Fort Myers north than Tampa Bay south, I think is probably the way I would put it. But, you know, could it work? Sure, it could work. Sarasota has an airport. Fort Myers has an airport. Sarasota has some hotels that would be, you know, big enough and for lack of a better word, fancy enough, you know, for major league standards. You know, there is one hotel in Punta Gorda, the Wyvern, that would probably work. I don't know how, you know, the rooming situation there would be, if there's enough rooms for a whole team. But also, if the Rays have to be put up and the visiting team has to be put up, you know, you run into some issues there as well. Punta Gorda itself was hit hard, as it seems to be, by every hurricane. There's beautiful downtown there with some great restaurants. A lot of those are closed up right now. So I don't know, like, just the logistic aspect of Port Charlotte, the fan base, you know, sure, on spring training games on a sunny, beautiful weekend day, do people come down from St. Pete, Tampa? Sure. But, you know, for 7-10 night games during the middle of the week, you know, where the Rays are playing the Rockies or something, no, I don't think you're gonna see a ton of people coming that way.
And you hit on, like, so just staying with the others in the market, because you have Clearwater, you have Dunedin, you have Tampa. You have three teams that I would say are smack dab in the St. Pete, Tampa market, where, I mean, if you can go from Dunedin to Clearwater, I've done literally two games that are going on at the same time, and it's 15 minutes. I mean, it's right there. Tampa, you know, the Steinbrenner Field is right by the Buck Stadium. It's very much right in the middle of that market, all that. But these are spring training stadiums. I think Steinbrenner holds 11,000, which is kind of like the upper end of these. But on top of that, like you mentioned, the business side, when we talk about that, there are no good answers here. If you work on the business side for the Rays, if you sell suites, if you sell, you know, like groups and things like that, none of those things can be fulfilled in any, like, all of these things that are kind of a lifeblood of teams nowadays for major league teams.
Yeah.
None of these options fulfill those? I mean, it's, again, there's no good answer for that, but none of these, there's none of these where you say, oh yeah, yeah, no, no problem. We're just going to transfer your suite over to wherever we're going to play. And
right.
I would talk about attendance, but that's a part of this too.
Yeah. Tickets, suites. And I think one of the things that the Rays said at the press conference about 10 weeks ago, when the new stadium deal was finalized, was they had already got a very encouraging response from the business community in terms of sponsorships, in terms of people that had been sponsors at Tropicana Field that were very excited about expanding their sponsorship and being part of, you know, even some of the things they're talking about, a lot of creative seating areas at the new stadium, and some sponsors that wanted to be involved in that right from the beginning, and an outreach from people that hadn't been sponsors before that wanted to be involved. So at a time when that was trending up for the Rays, you're right. Now they have no real answer for those people. I don't know if they're going to be in a situation like, use Raymond James Stadium. You mentioned the Buck Stadium, the college team, local college team, USF plays there. So when USF plays there, there's a bunch of banners for USF and their sponsors. Then they rip them down when they play on a Saturday night after their game, and the normal Bucks banners are up for their Sunday games. So, you know, depending on, again, if the Rays could work out a deal with one of the area teams, if that organization would be willing to move their FSL team, if they would be willing to relinquish control of the stadium for 6 months, if they would allow the Rays to put sponsorship banners over their sponsorship banners. I mean, there's so many levels of this that are way beyond a sports writer's ability to figure out from the business standpoint and the compensation. And does MLB step in? Is there a best interest of baseball clause here? You know, I was thinking about the Disney thing. Let's say the Rays do want to go there, but there's a lot of conflict. Does Rob Manfred call the head of Disney / ESPN and say, we need to make this work? Tell us what the number is. We'll write the check. This has to happen. You know, I just don't know how this gets done.
And I even want to say with Orlando, because I know that stadium pretty well, the stadium at Disney, the Braves left there because the footprint's too small for what teams want for spring training in the 2020s. The clubhouses are too small. There wasn't the room. There wasn't the ability to say, oh, no, we're going to open this up. We're going to knock this out. And this will be to where you want. That's why the Braves moved to Northport, is they thought that even though this was a many fields, a full spring training stadium, this was too small for them to do spring training, much less now we're talking about the possibility of a major league team potentially using this for a season. Again, these things we're talking about, I like your term for it, the Friedman term, all these are suboptimal. But to now take it to that next step, and I kind of want to ask this from a personal perspective too, because I mean, you are someone who covers this team. And again, if they're doing it in Clearwater, if they're doing it in Tampa, if they're doing it in Port Charlotte, it's like, okay, it's in the market that you are. If this becomes the traveling road show, or this becomes, hey, home base is going to be Omaha or Durham or Charlotte or Nashville or whatever, I don't know what that's like for a team. If that's going to be a year or a 2 year, like what that does for a market that, let's be honest, has always had challenges. You know, like this is supposed to be the time where the Rays are taking a step forward as far as the fan base, as far as support. Oh, we're going to have a new stadium and all this. And now there's this great unknown.
Oh, and I agree with everything you said, and even adding to it. And again, and you know, for anyone listening, if you know, we understand, fully aware that there are many more severe issues, you know, people are facing besides where the baseball team's going to play, and want to make sure no one thinks we're glossing over that. But they're entering a period where they're going to be really good too. These next 2-3 years with the core that they have, especially on the pitching side, the young position players that you guys know well better than I or anyone else, how promising that group, especially that group that was at Montgomery this year, is they feel like they are entering a cusp, if not in 25, certainly starting in 26, where they're going to be really good for a window of time here. So you add that factor too, is from, you know, obviously the fans here want to see that, but even just the inconveniences of that. And you know, how does this affect offseason spending? I mean, by making all those trades they made in July, they cleared about $45 million of what would have been payroll for the 25 season. They're not going to spend all of that. They did that for a reason, but you know, that logic would tell you there was some flexibility there. If Willie Adames came out and said, you know what, I'll take a little bit less because I want to go back to Tampa Bay and play with those guys, you know, they might have been in position to do that. Does this affect, you know, their spending on the short term for these next couple of years? I think that's another fair question.
If you told me that we looked at this 3 years from now and said the reason that the Rays, we thought that the Rays were going to be a perennial playoff team, you know, with this stretch, which they've been a perennial playoff team. This was the dip this year, but they've been basically that for several years now. It wouldn't be shocking to say that this could be kind of the thing that kind of that has a risk of derailing them, because as you said, it encompasses so many different things. Like, it's not easy as a team to pick up and leave your home area. It's not easy as a team to make do with all these inconveniences, not having the same level of facility that you have at a true big league stadium. But it also could be $15, $20 million in revenue differences that affects payroll and all those things. Like, I guess, Mark, kind of with that, like, is there any sense in your reporting of how quickly the Rays can, this is again complicated because they want to get answers as yesterday if they can, but at the same time there, I understand, you know, like, there are bigger things going on in the St. Pete, Tampa area where it's like, you can't be like knocking on the door and say, hey, we got to get this done while you're still cleaning up the debris from the hurricane. Is there any understanding of like when there will hopefully be some more clarity on this?
Yeah, I do think, you know, it is on a shorter track, and you're right. Look, they have some staff people that, you know, I've just heard anecdotally whose homes were destroyed in one of the two hurricanes, or were, you know, flooded to the point of being inhabitable is probably the better way to phrase that. But, you know, they have some staff people that they're trying to, you know, place in new home housing situations, and a lot of staff with a lot of questions. The other thing is the stadium is insured. The insurance on the stadium is by the city of St. Petersburg. They're responsible for the repairs. So I think anyone who's had any homeowner claim, much less in an area like ours that has been ravaged by two storms and is inundated with claims of insurance, this is not going to be an easy process. The city isn't going to make one call to their insurance agent who's going to say, all right, get an estimate and we'll write the check for, you know, $50 million and fix your stadium for you. And it's, you know, it'll be a three-party situation with the team, the city, and the insurance company. So this is going to be complicated to get a sense of how and if it can be repaired, what that time frame would be, which I think drives a lot of this. But we have heard they're going to have some engineering people in the next week or two. I think they want to make sure, first of all, you know, that roof was held up by essentially miles of cables that wrapped around and created the tension to hold the roof up and did for 35 years or so. And I think they want to make sure that those structures or struts, as they call them, are safe and that's not about to fall down. I actually drove by the field this morning. I had to run an errand downtown before we did this recording. And, you know, you drive by now and you still see pieces of the roof are hanging there. It was shredded, essentially. And, you know, they have to make sure nothing's going to fall. There is a puncture on one side of the building. I had reported in that story, some of their team offices just had a drop ceiling under the canopy of the stadium roof. Those are now open air offices on their executive level on the fourth floor. So they haven't had a chance to even, people have not had a chance to go back in and see their offices yet to see what the damage is, you know, how much water got in there. And until they can cover this up, you know, we're going to have rain again. We're actually in a good weather week right now, but we're going to have rain and winds again that's going to impact things further. So this will be an ongoing thing. But I think once they get the engineers in there and get an actual assessment of, you know, this looks okay, this doesn't look okay, I mean, who knows? They may come back and say it's total. They may come back and say a short-term repair is going to work. Here's how you can do it. I mean, I don't know what to expect. I would assume they're going to keep their expectations low. But once they get that, I would assume then they can kind of move forward with, okay, we know, you know, I think we've all concluded, as we reported the other day, opening day is 161 days, I think, from today. They're not going to play there on March 27th. But as you said, could they play there in June? Could they play there in July? We'll drive some of this short-term, long-term housing situation. But I'm sure every player is calling asking, where should we get a rental? What are we doing?
The other thing that was part of your story as well, like, you can't just go to Home Depot and say, hey, I'm looking for roof coverings for a stadium, you know, like, you know, is that aisle 18, 54? Where do I go? Like the mere, if you said today, hey, this is, we can go back in here. It's going to cost a number that we're comfortable with. The insurance company, which is not going to happen, was ready to write the check today. At that point, you then have to go bid out to say, okay, can we find someone to build these, this covering that doesn't exist right now?
Yeah, it was six. It's 6 acres of material is what the data that the Rays had provided it just in their regular normal media guide that it's a, it was Teflon coated fiberglass, 6 acres. So yeah, those blue tarps that people get, you know, in hurricane situations that you're familiar with and you drive through hurricane stricken areas, you know, this is, as you say, this, I don't know. I mean, I guess that's probably something I could report on is call some of these companies and ask them, how long does it take to make a roof like that? Does it take weeks, months, or years? I mean, that would probably be part of the solution to this, but they've got to find a way, right, to cover it up now, repair whatever damage that they can repair now, figure out all the stuff inside that wasn't built to be exposed to the elements, like the scoreboard. I know scoreboards in most stadiums are outside. They're used to that. I don't know if theirs was built differently since it was built for inside facility. And then, you know, it's almost like we said, there's two or three tracks to this whole process of what's wrong, how long it's going to take to fix, where do you go, how do you get there, what's the best place to play.
So Matt and I are going to have some fun kind of talking about all, fun, maybe the wrong word, but about all these different alternatives. But I did want to, like, since you're our Florida expert on this, I did want to ask you one that you've mentioned just to kind of explain it to people who aren't from Florida, who aren't aware of this. Like, I feel like with Florida, you're talking about there's almost kind of like two different, like if you're talking about an outdoor stadium in Florida, you've kind of got the summer version and you've got the spring or, you know, or fall version of what that's like. You kind of alluded to this, but could you explain to people what the challenge of you? You said, okay, they're going to be in an outdoor stadium in the area. What would be the problem with that? Like, or, you know, again, like, let's just say in the magical world that drainage is easy and they can turn, you know, which we, you already laid out why this would be difficult, but the Trop's now an outdoor stadium, any of these scenarios, why that's a problem in the Tampa St. Pete area.
Yeah, just and anyone who's been down here at that time of year, or if you even if you follow like an FSL team online or things like that, and the Marlins in the early days, you know, we pretty much go through about a 2 to 2.5 month period where there's rain every afternoon. It kind of forms 4 o'clock or so, sometimes 3. You see the clouds form and it just kind of comes through. And some days it comes through and it's torrential rain, but it only lasts 20 minutes. Some days it hovers, and I've been at games at Tropicana Field, and there's it's kind of even an ongoing joke that, you know, the lights would flicker. Sometimes something you would see, you'd hear the thunder. You'd even sometimes, because the roof was translucent, you could even see a flash of lightning, and then you'd hear the thunder, and then the lights would flicker. So, you know, those could be some pretty vicious storms, and you're going to have that every night. So that affects your attendance, because people don't want to come and sit outside and get poured on. That affects your batting practice a lot of days. It affects your pitcher's work. It affects, you know, just all the stuff teams do. And again, if you're at a custom-made facility, a major league level facility, you're going to have indoor pitching mounds. You're going to have an indoor batting cage, so you can work around all that stuff. If you're using a spring training stadium that's not going to have that type of facilities, you know, you're not going to be able to avoid that. So disruption of work and disruption of routine is as much part of the actual number of games that get postponed. But if you're putting people up, you're changing travel schedules. If you start having to have rainouts and bring teams back, or double headers that now last, you know, night games instead of day games, and teams are already heading, you know, change their schedule. I would assume MLB, once this is figured out, will look at the schedule and see if there's some ways to make it easier, because all the visiting teams are now going somewhere else too. If you're not playing in the immediate Tampa Bay area, if you're playing in Orlando or Port Charlotte. So there's just so many layers of this. But I think that the shortest answer is the daily rains for 2 to 3 months that will disrupt games, pregame work, scheduling and travel and attendance.
This is one of those things where it's like you don't want to just throw your hands up, but at the same time, as you said, I want to emphasize, you hit it. As problems go with all this, this is a small one, right? This is unfortunate. This is inconvenient. This is going to be less than ideal for the Rays from a standpoint of, you know, how they operate. It's not the same as people who are dealing with who lost their houses. You know, there are people who died in this storm and all that. We don't want to minimize it. But Mark, you know, thank you for kind of helping us understand kind of all the challenges that are faced with this. Glad to know that, you know, that you're again, that you're, you know, that, that you and your family made it through, you know, all, you know, quite well. And we'll be still watching, you know, again, yeah, you know, Mark, you know, like we'll put it in the show link. I don't want to misquote your social media handles, but if people want to be following you on this, what's the best way for them to do that?
Well, on X, it's TV Times underscore Rays, and the newspaper website, TampaBay.com, which has, you know, incredible extensive coverage of all of the impact of the hurricane and some startling images of the trop as well. Some of our photojournalists did an amazing job with that.
Well, thank you for joining us, Mark. We will let you go now. Matt and I are going to keep talking about this, but we don't want to hold you for too long. So thank you again for helping us better understand this. And, you know, again, we best wishes on all of the recovery going on down there.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And if they end up in Durham, I'll be calling you guys and asking for tips as well. So,
Hey, again, selfishly, I don't think either of us would complain about that from a purely selfish, standpoint.
All right, thank you, Mark. Sounds good.
And so now, Matt, we're kind of thank again to Mark. You know, we're back. As you kind of see all this kind of shaking out, like there is no good answer. But if you were given unlimited power, you are made not just MLB commissioner, but let's take it to another level. You're just like omnipotent being here. What's the best solution as you see, or is there one?
I don't have a great answer for you. It seems like keeping them in Florida would be an important consideration, Miami or Orlando perhaps. And if not there, I mean, the most ideal setting might be Omaha because it has no permanent tenant and you would only have a long-range disruption only for June for the College World Series. What is your sense?
I actually think that the crazy thing about this, and Mark kind of explained this a little bit, but the fact that we now know that the Rays are permanently in that area, right? Like that there's a long-term, if this had happened 5 years ago, I could 100% see this being the leaping off point for the Rays moving somewhere else, because you could, as awful as it would be, it's like, hey, it's going to take a year. It's going to take whatever. We don't know if we're going to rebuild the trop, all those things. This could be like, okay, we're going to move them to Montreal or we're going to move them to wherever. And if that goes well, say, well, we're drawing 20K here. We only drew 16, 17 there. This is our new home or whatever. But we now know that the Rays are a St. Petersburg, Tampa area team, and they're going to be that for decades to come. I think with that being the case, you have to look more for the long term. The long term is how do we best do this where we don't nuke our own market, right? And that's where it does seem like that it would make more sense to take some short term inconveniences and pain to keep them much more local. And that's where, like, to be honest, I know that Orlando seems like an option because it's a stadium that they've been in before that's not that far away. But like I do look at it and I struggle to say where Orlando would have an advantage to doing that over, well, in this case, Port Charlotte, which is not ideal either, but it's a small, much smaller city, but which the Rays actually is their facility. But especially when we compare it to a Dunedin or a Clearwater or a, and really, to be honest, like my best logical option, it would seem to be, is Steinbrenner Field. It's not ideal, but it does seat 11,000 as it stands right now. Without any kind of upgrades, you could, let's be honest, have a state, you could have attendance that's below what you do for the Rays, but not that far below. It is smack dab in the middle of the market where, yes, you would have fans who normally stay on the St. Pete side. They have to go across the bridge, you know, the bridges, I should say, to get to the Tampa side. But that's a drive that people in that area do all the time. You know, again, I don't want to make it sound like I'm a St. Pete resident, but did have family down there, still do have family down there. Thankfully got all through all this okay. But like who, you know, that's a drive that everyone does. And that keeps you in the market. You are still a Tampa Bay team, right? Like, you're not, oh, our team is gone. Those are, Mark laid it out. There's a lot of things that are not ideal about that. The stadium's going to be too small. You're not going to have the suites like you do. Like, if you do it at Steinbrenner Field, like, let's just say theoretically, are you going to kick out the Tampa Tarpons? You know, like, okay, you probably are, but that's not ideal for the Yankees, because that's the Yankees facility. That's their complex. But on top of that, are you going to be, as the Rays, real comfortable? Like, there's a lot of, understandably, like, that's one of your AL East rivals, and you're going to be playing in a stadium that is just swimming in Yankees logos. Rightfully, it's a Yankee stadium. It's Steinbrenner Field. But I don't even think, like, Miami, I know the logic is like, well, that you have this in, you know, this facility that works, that's still in the state. But I mean, to be honest, Miami doesn't really provide a whole lot of advantages over saying, like, hey, we're going to play this in Atlanta. Like, that's a different market. That is far from, there is no one in St. Pete is like, you know what I feel like I want to do today? I'm going to go to Miami. Like, that's, yeah. You are going to a different market. And if you're going to do that, I don't think that there's a whole lot of advantage of going to Miami over going to take your pick.
And Mark wrote in his story that there's already like 50 to 60 conflicting home dates between Tampa Bay and Miami. So you have to reschedule like crazy to even make that work.
The other thing about that is Miami doesn't draw for its big league team. And we know, like, there is no operator wants to be home every day. Like, you're going to see this in Sacramento with the A's moving to Sacramento. Having a home game every day, even with the weird situation we're going to have in the MLB and AAA games, is not a good thing. Because the reality of it is, I'm speaking largely knowing this from the minor league side, talking to minor league operators. But if you have a game every day, there's no reason to buy advance tickets, right? Like, you're not going to say, like, oh, I need to get tickets for when they're back in town in 2 weeks. There's always someone in town, unless you're a diehard Marlins or a Rays fan. So that's going to be a complicating factor. But the other part of all this, like, okay, so let's take it outside of the little Florida circle where they could do it at a spring training facility. Is there what I would have to term it kind of expansion potential market where you would really want to see that has a stadium that might fit?
Yikes. Mark ruled out Olympic Stadium in Montreal.
That would be the most logical one from that standpoint, wouldn't it?
The Oakland Coliseum makes no sense for the reasons Mark stated. MLB in the past has used Hiram Bithron Stadium in San Juan, Puerto Rico. That, I have no idea what the status is there. That doesn't seem ideal. I mean, although it does keep them somewhat regionally local, but I don't know. No, do the old Charlotte and Nashville ballparks still exist? I don't know.
I will. Any old ballpark is out because you just can't, like, the facilities improvements. Like, the thing that I will say that does work for this, like, when we're talking about minor league parks and we're talking about spring training parks, like Mark was talking about batting cages and things like that. Minor league facility standards now require 2 covered batting cages for any minor league park. Now, I say requires. I can't promise you that all 120 minor league teams check that box right now, but I would say that the vast majority do. Like, that they have now, you know, indoor tunnels, you know, like there are facilities now. Every minor league park is required to have 1,000 square feet for the home clubhouse and 1,000 for the visitors. So there are things now where the minor league facility standards, while not major league, aren't as far away from it as they would have been if we were talking 10 years ago. But we did see when the Blue Jays, I think it probably is worth bringing up, you know, reminding everyone that the Blue Jays played in Dunedin. They played in Buffalo because they couldn't come across the border at that time because of COVID, you know, during that time. No, there weren't fans. I mean, which is the thing that makes this a very different scenario, because fans are going to be a very important part of it. But you did see there that you could make this work from a standpoint of, you know, the same way that they can make it work in Sacramento. You can, you can do things to make this as major league caliber as you can. And by the way, now when you're talking about it, you know, again, the main things for that also are like lighting, which the minor league standard for foot candles. And yeah, you know, this is me getting to be, you know, my baseball business side geek. The foot candle requirements for minor league baseball are less than the foot candle requirements for major league baseball. But that's a matter now. Nowadays with LED lights, that's not nearly the same issue that it would have been 20 years ago, where you're like, hey, our light standards just don't have the carrying capacity to carry the amount of lights we need for this. Thankfully, LED lights are a lot lighter than the old incandescents that took 20 minutes to warm up. So if you had a power outage, you were guaranteed a 30-minute delay and all those kind of things. So there are ways where this has become a little bit easier. But you mentioned like Omaha, you know, does have the largest stadium. Now you'd have to go on a long road trip in June, but you do have a stadium there that seats 24,000. I don't know how much of a sales pitch that is for this though, because I'll pose the question to you this way. If you're the Rays, is your biggest goal turnstile attendance? Or is it least disruption to the team, least disruption to the market? And I would say that the biggest thing, your biggest goal for this is to not lose the fan base in your market, where if you go on the road for multiple years, I do feel like that would be a bigger problem than saying, hey, the good news is we drew 8,000 more a game in Omaha than we would have in Tampa.
Yeah, those are great points. By staying local, yeah, you can continue to draw fans and not alienate existing fans, while also not uprooting team coaching and training and player staff. You know, there's just so many advantages that you lay out to staying local.
That's the thing with all of this. I get it. Like on a player perspective, players, as rough as it is, it's kind of an itinerant lifestyle, right? Like if you're a player, and one year you're in Montgomery, and the next year you're in Durham, and the next year you're in St. Pete. That's the goal, right? The goal is that, yep, the family's going to pick up and move. And the goal is even, let's be honest, if you're a Rays player and you've signed a long-term deal, you can buy a house if you want, but you're probably at some point going to be looking and going, oh, I'll put the house on the market, because you know there aren't a whole lot of players who stay with the Rays for 10 years. There are a whole lot of people who work for the Rays, who live in the Tampa St. Pete area, who've lived there for 10, 15, 20 years because this is their job. This is where they work. And while, you know, there's not nearly the same level of turnover for staffing, again, that's other people who are going to be affected by this. Like if you work at the Trop for game day, you don't know what's going to, this is awful. I mean, again, like as the schemes of things are going on, you know, as the things are going on in St. Pete area, I don't want to minimize that this is an inconvenience more than other things, but there are going to be a whole lot of people affected by this in a way. Like there were a whole lot of people who were affected in Oakland, right? There were game day employees. There are people who work for the A's. There are players who love being in Oakland and all that who have been uprooted from that by something outside of their decision. But that's a conscious decision that an ownership group has made with the ascent of MLB. This is one where there's some decisions going to have to be made here, but no one wants this. This is a very unfortunate scenario. And it is amazing to me. The other thing that stands out, Matt, you and I both love baseball history. This really is, it's not unprecedented, but it's close to it.
Yeah, I think the Yankees spent 2 years at Shea when they were remodeling in the
70s. But that was planned.
Yeah, that's true. And it was another major league facility that was new at the time.
And in your city, like you're like, yeah, okay, yeah. It's not next door. But at the same time, it was like, guys, we're just playing, you know, further away in the same market.
Yeah.
You know, the Dodgers went from Coliseum, you know, the LA Coliseum, which is the, yeah, quite simply the stupidest, you know, like that would be the other thing that has not even been really kind of floated out there, but is if you played at Raymond James, which would be too big of a stadium for the Rays, let's be clear. But we saw from the Coliseum, like, don't try to make a true football stadium into a baseball stadium. We don't want to have a 250-foot left field with a 100-foot high fence.
Is that where the Buccaneers play?
Yeah.
Okay. Just to clarify.
Which is, by the way, you can see it from Steinbrenner Field and vice versa. Like, those two are there together.
I thought it was interesting, Mark noted about for an indoor facility, they don't have the drainage capacity. I thought that was an interesting alternative approach to create a drainage structure at the existing Trop with no roof. Because, to be honest, the Marlins did it for 20 years. The Marlins played outdoors for 20 years.
Not ideal, but I do think the key points that he hit on is like, that, again, neither of us are even pretending that we're structural engineers or, you know, electrical engineers or things like that. But none of that facility was designed for outdoor, right? Like, I say this as someone who, you know, likes to repair things and all. And if I'm looking at, like, I want to put in electrical, for instance, if I'm putting a new switch inside the house, I'm buying one kind of switch. But if I'm putting a switch on the outside of the house, that's rated for indoor, outdoor. You know, it's a whole different situation to, like Mark laid it out with their video board. Like, there is no logical reason that they would have designed their video board to be able to sustain thunderstorm rain because we got a roof, you know, like it. That's the other thing I think is kind of a good way to wrap this up, which is, the other challenging aspect that Mark hit on here, though, is we're going to hear this decision hopefully before too long, because the Rays have to figure out, like, there's a lot that has to go into wherever they're going to play. There's going to have to be upgrades and things like that, where the sooner you can start, the better. It is hard, though, to make a case. Mark's story, which is, again, linked in the show notes, laid out, like, we're talking maybe covered by insurance, although you have to, you're on the insurance company's timetable, which is just the reality of it. But we're talking about tens of millions of dollars purely just to replace the roof, right? And if there's other damage that is involved in this, which there probably is to some extent, because the roof was ripped off and the roof, the guide wires and all that are part of the structure of this. It's going to be hard to make the pitch to spend 30, 40, $50 million to fix up a stadium that, you know, not just you're not going to be playing baseball in a couple of years, but you know you're going to tear down, right? Like, to take this to the, we were talking about home analogy, right? If your home or my home, Matt, is damaged, we're going to try to fix it probably because it's our home. But if you said, like, by the way, we also know, like, we've already signed the contract, we're taking our land and we're going to build a new home on it, and we're going to tear this one down in 2 years, and this is going to be our yard, I'm probably not going to be going to the same level of degree of trying to fix up the old house to move in, to move back out.
Yep. All that, you know, that further reinforces the local angle, right? Because you're going to be like the Athletics. I mean, think about that from MLB's perspective. Like, it's maximum chaos. Like, these two franchises that have been chaotic for, you know, 20 years are now both potentially going to be on the road for three seasons or out of a home park.
You're going to have two teams probably playing at least some level in minor league ballparks for the next couple of years. Or at least, I shouldn't say next couple of years. We don't know with the Rays. We know that with the A's for a period of time. We know that the Rays will not be playing, by Mark Topkin's reporting, are not going to be playing their opening day 2025. Now, the other thing, and this is pure speculation, like, Mark made the point, we don't know if that new stadium will be built in time for 28, which would be, add another complicating factor. The flip side of that, though, is that stadium was designed to be done basically at the end of the 27 season for 28. If you know that you're not going to be able to go back in the Trop, the other thing that becomes at least a possibility is start looking into, are there ways that we can speed up completion of our new stadium? Because if you all of a sudden know that 25, 26, 27, Trop is not an option, which we're not saying that. We're saying if that ends up being the case, if you could, any time in which you could speed up, if you could be into that new ballpark by mid-season of 27, that makes a difference. If you could somehow, you know, like at that point, being able to get the new stadium up and running quicker would become a, it shortens your time of the least ideal scenario here. Again, it's all these things are complicated, but like, is there any other else? You know, again, you mentioned San Juan. That's an interesting one. Like the worst case scenario for this, like, is the traveling road show to me of like, hey, we're going to try out every expansion market there is out there. And so we're going to play games in Nashville and we're going to play games in Charlotte and we're going to play games in Raleigh, Durham, and we're going to play games in Montreal. And by the way, we'll have a series in Oakland, and you know what? Portland doesn't even have a ballpark for it, but we'll figure out a way to play in Portland. To me, that doesn't work from a standpoint of like, this is your, these are major league games. You don't do that to a team. Is that fair?
Yeah, we've seen MLB do international games in Mexico. You know, I don't know how feasible that is. I don't think the Far East, I don't think Japan or Korea are feasible, but I don't know. I don't think it would be more than just like a series here and there. I don't think they would uproot a team and make them really do an entire Road Warriors schedule from the old independent days.
Pennsylvania Road Warriors, baby. They're not the only one, but that when I think of indie ball road teams, it's always the Pennsylvania Road Warriors that come to mind first, where they would literally never have a home park the entire year, you know.
Because I guess you could look at it as an opportunity to showcase Major League Baseball in markets that don't have it, you know, your Portland series, your Las Vegas series, you know, whatever.
But I guess the other thing is that doesn't really tell you anything long-term for the viability of those markets either, right? Like, the other part of this is that it does show interest for that week or whatever, but like, if you told me, hey, we played again, the Savannah Bananas are going to, by the way, I'll just bring this up. The Bananas are playing a game in Nashville in the football stadium, right? They're not playing a game in the minor league stadium. They're not saying, oh, you know, we're going to take the sound stadium. They're playing in the football stadium, and they're doing that in multiple places this year because the Bananas draw so much that they're like, you know, 70,000 fans. Let's get 70,000 fans. But what I'm saying though is even if you did that, right? Let's say that in some scenario you said, we're going to put a game in the Titan Stadium in Nashville for three games. And they sold out all three, right? And so you said there were 60,000 fans at each of these Rays games. That doesn't tell you anything about long-term the viability of the Nashville market for baseball, right? That tells you that for this special event, that's a really kind of cool event that you got, let's just say again, in this theoretical world, 150,000 plus people through the gates, which would be a great strong showing of interest. But even if that happened, that doesn't tell you that you're going to have the fan base to support a team for 81 games a year for 25 years. You know, like that's not the same thing. Like if you played a game in Mexico City or a series and you sold out in Mexico City, that doesn't necessarily tell you that that's the, if you sold out in Montreal, which we've seen when the Blue Jays have played games in Montreal, that tells you, hey, there's fans here, but it doesn't tell you the same question. Doesn't answer your questions about what is the best long-term viable market for a major league team in my mind. So Matt, as we wrap this up, is there any ever avenue that we haven't, like, I think we've kind of gotten to the point of saying, I fear, I said it with Mark, I do fear that this could be that in a Earth 2 where the Rays just got to play in the Trop the next 3 years like normal, if you told me that the Rays won fewer games over the next three seasons because of this, I don't think that that's a crazy idea. Because if you told me that they are right now having to project that their revenue is going to be significantly less than it would have been in a normal scenario, that's 100%. Again, I don't like, there's going to have to be makeups, you know, give backs or whatever, because you're going to have sponsors, you're going to have groups, you're going to have suites and all that. You either you can't fulfill, or hey, yeah, we do have suites, but they're in fill in the blank city that is 2 hours from here. Well, that doesn't really do the same thing for, you know, for me bringing clients in the Tampa, St. Pete area. But I mean, I think that's probably a good way to win. You know, like, do you think that this could hurt the Rays on the field over the next few years?
Oh yeah. I think what Mark pointed out and what you have pointed out, you know, revenues decrease, costs increase if you have to rent a space you weren't expecting to rent. Yeah, I think that could impact the major league payroll and the major league product.
I hope it doesn't, because again, the Rays have I would describe it as I perceive it, their farm system talent, which has been very good, it dipped. We had a stretch there where it was taking a hit, partly because of the trades they made this year, but partly also because of the development of players like draftees, like Xavier Isaac, Trey Morgan, Chandler Simpson, to go on top of, you know, Carson Williams and players who were already top prospects. This is a team that they have young pitching. They have young position players. They're interesting. They have Junior Caminero, who just got up to the big leagues. There's a lot here to like. But this adds a level of uncertainty. A team that already faces more uncertainty, you know, is, again, it's never a team. Like, when we talk about, like, I guess, again, if you're finding upsides and downsides, if this happened to a team like the Red Sox, the Yankees, or someone like that, and we said the best option in your market is a 10,000, 11,000 seat stadium, we would be saying, okay, where do the other 20,000, 30,000 fans go? In Tampa, if you're going from a stadium that's been artificially capped at 25K, and draws significantly less than that, to a stadium that, let's say, like, again, Steinbrenner's 11. And by the way, if you know that you're going to be there for a while, maybe you spend some upgrades to bump that up even a little bit further. It's not going to be attendance wise the same kind of hit. Suites and all is a different story, because again, no spring training facility has the same level of all those amenities that you have at a big league park. But we are entering into a great unknown. And again, we will keep covering this story. But again, I do want to thank Mark Topkin for joining us to give that perspective. If you want to know about this, there's no one better to follow. Mark, Matt and I've known Mark for longer than either of us would like to admit, but Mark is, when we say the dean of Tampa Bay Rays coverage, he's been there since the start. And the other thing about it is this is the other thing we didn't even get into. I'm sorry, I'm rambling on this, but it all is important. I do worry, like, Mark is, if you said your independent goes to the ballpark coverage of the Rays, that's Mark. I'm not saying that there's no one else out there, radio and all that, but that is not a market, you know, where you say that there are 10 beat reporters who cover the Rays on a regular basis. If that team is on the road, you know, I don't even know what the coverage of that team is going to look like, because this is it again, all these challenges.
Yeah. I think we're coming up on 30 years since the creation of the Rays franchise. And I think Mark has written every word about that franchise in the pages of Baseball America.
He has been our correspondent from basically day one. He has been the St. Pete Times, now Tampa Bay Times. He's actually been through an entire name change of his paper/website in that time, but he has been there since before they even started covering this, before they ever even had the team, before the expansion draft, before those years where the Rays had a big league team. Because again, people who haven't been around long, that is always one of the fun things about expansion teams, is they have minor league teams before they have major league teams. Yep. You know, they kind of build up the minor league side first.
Yep.
You know, so all that, Mark was there for all that. But we hope you enjoyed this. For Matt, I'm JJ. Thank you again for the download. Thank you for, please like and subscribe if you're watching this on the YouTube channel, for everything. Thank you all. So long.